This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Each year, hundreds of thousands of people move from the United States to Mexico. This number includes both those who are deported and those who choose to return. Many of these individuals spend their formative years in the United States and experience distinct challenges when they return to Mexico, including culture shock, depression, and difficulty getting jobs and education. The anthology, Los Otros Dreamers, documents the stories of 26 people whose lives have crossed borders, cultures, languages, and nationalities. I'm joined by two of the book's contributors today, Claudia Amaro and Maggie Laredo. Claudia, welcome. Good to talk with you.
Thank you, Frank.
And Maggie, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Also with us is the book's co-author, Jill Anderson, who is with me in the studio. Jill, welcome to State of Things.
Thank you.
Jill, tell me more about the backstory of the project and how this got going, kind of what's behind it.
So I'm originally from the United States, but an immigrant to Mexico. I've been living in Mexico City for the last 10 years, part of a binational family. And in 2012, I, as part of a research project, I began to meet and talk to young people who were born in Mexico, had grown up in the United States, and found themselves back in Mexico. Many of them due to deportation, others because of the deportation of a family member, and others because of, like you said, the obstacles that they faced and the threat of deportation led them to make the decision to move back. And listening to their stories, I was so moved, and it was so clear that their stories were not being heard and recognized in Mexico or in the United States. And so that's why, with my co-author, Nin Solis, the photographer, we decided to do a book to raise up really the amazing diversity, the challenges, but also the potential of this bicultural generation in the U.S. and Mexico.
And tell us what this means, Los Otros Dreamers, the other dreamers. What do you mean? And what does that image conjure for us?
Right. Los Otros Dreamers certainly refers to the movement of dreamers in the United States, which, you know, raises up the situation of young people who want to study and don't have a path to citizenship in the U.S. But the otros refers to being al otro lado de la frontera, right? The other side of the border in Mexico. And also being other, muy otros, in the sense that there are young people in the book who have criminal records, who were deported, who would never have qualified for the DREAM Act or DACA. There are also young people who would have qualified for DACA, but they had returned before 2012. And it's recognizing that what they've lived, they've been criminalized really by a system that leads them to, you know, make mistakes there, but they're still struggling. And you really hear that in their stories, that in Mexico, they're struggling to contribute to their community in Mexico. They, you know, in the U.S., many of them sending child support, trying to send child support back to their families in the U.S. And so it really, the book, you know, also hopes to interrupt that idea that you know, deportation is okay for criminals, because really we've seen that thousands of these young people, they don't even know Mexico, and they receive bans of 10 years or even a lifetime ban for mistakes they made when they were 21 years old.
Well, Maggie, you are one of the contributors to this book, and I'd like you to tell us a bit about your family, how they came to the United States, and about your life here in the United States first.
Yes, my parents decided to bring me to the United States when I was almost 3 years. And I grew up in the U.S. thinking like I was just, as my friends, I didn't see any difference until when I'm about to graduate high school, when I just realized that I wasn't going to be able to drive or to get a license or get a part-time job, go to college. I find myself taking the hard decision to go back to Mexico, a country that I didn't know, but I thought that I had rights because I was a citizen. I get back to Mexico at the age of 18, right after high school, and I realize that I don't have papers in Mexico because my education is not recognized in Mexico. I have to go through this whole process, long process, and there's basically not support, along with the cultural shock, the depression of being alone and not having anybody that could really understand me.
So you didn't have family there. You didn't move in with family.
Grandparents, yeah, or people that I had never seen. And also realizing that that I did feel like I was by myself. I had to hide my identity. Like, I couldn't speak English because people in Mexico would say, like, oh, you think you're all that just because you speak English, and those things. So I hid my identity for many years until I met Jill Anderson and Los Otros Dreamers, and I found out that there were other people like me. And then I applied for a B1, B2 tourist visa in 2015 to be able to come back home. And luckily, I was privileged enough to get a 10-year visa, and now I have mobility. And that's basically when I also really awakened, because I came back home. I was able to close cycles, but also I have this responsibility and commitment to really fight for all my community that of returnees and deportees in Mexico, and that we all deserve to be binational.
Did that, the fact that you had the visa, change your reception in Mexico, the way you were received?
I mean, I still struggle with a lot of things, even though I've been there for 8 years. I mean, I don't think it has changed yet a lot, but I have like a new world open to me, and I have the strength to really fight and make those doors open.
And Claudia, tell us, you're another contributor to this book, and you have a slightly different experience. Tell us your experience.
I came to the United States when I was 12 years old after my father was killed in Mexico. I graduated from high school here. I've been living in Wichita, Kansas for many years. And that's where I describe as my home. During this week, with a lot of the presentations we had, somebody asked us when was this in our life when we felt the safest. And I had to think through it. But I think me living in Kansas, since I got there, I've been feeling safe after my father was killed when I was a kid. And then in 2005, my husband was deported, and I took the decision to take my son, who then was 6 years old, and move back to Mexico. And just as Maggie describes, it was very hard for me. I had to erase my past. And to me, it was even more... it was even harder because I was making decisions for a 5-year-old U.S. citizen, and just bringing the reality that when they deport adults, they're also deporting the U.S. citizen that are kids, because they're it's hard for them to come back, and they go through this trauma. My son was bullied by being American. I really had to be very careful on when I spoke. I couldn't speak about my past. I couldn't, you know, get a job because my friend from high school helped me out. And, you know, you basically erased your past. And I was able to come back after my husband was kidnapped by 2 police officers in Mexico for ransom. It was really hard for me. And I really wanted to come back. And that's when I found out about Los Otros Dreamers. And just like Maggie described as well, I was very, it really opened my world, knowing that I wasn't the only one going through that, and it was more people in Mexico going through the same feelings that I was having, the same feeling of rejection that I was having, you know, that not belonging here or there. And then I came back with the civil disobedience in the summer of 2013. I presented myself at the border with 8 more fellows, and we were detained for 17 days after it was a community effort, and they did a lot of communication with congressmen. And then finally, after 17 days, I was able to come back home to Wichita. My husband did the same thing, but he had to spend 2 years and 3 months in detention. And now we're back in the United States fighting for our own cases.
Tell us about that decision, the civil disobedience, and what the strategy was there.
The strategy was to present ourselves at the border and then bring up attention to what President Obama at the time was saying, that he was only deporting criminals. And that was not the case. That was one part of it. And the other part, the campaign name was Bring Them Home. It was like calling the attention of this separation of families, and then all the people who grew up in the United States and were being deported or basically pushed or pressed to be self-deported, right? So that was part of the civil disobedience, just to call the attention of not just the politicians, but also the whole community, and just request our right to come back home.
And Maggie, you talked about the difficulty in not only finding a job, but once you had a job, feeling exploited in your work because of your status.
Yes, I when I first got a job as an English teacher, I was really happy, but then things got out of control. Like, I was doing many things and not getting paid, and sometimes at all, and sometimes really little. But I also knew that I didn't have any experience in Mexico, that I didn't have any recommendation letters in Mexico, that I didn't have a college degree. And I was like, I'm not going to be able to find another job that easily. So that was a struggle.
Would you talk about the maybe some of the other examples in the book and what this points to? Because it seems to me that what you're saying here is that you end up with sort of without portfolio, without documentation or legitimization in either culture. And of course, that leaves you more vulnerable. And all of the things that we think are the fallout from immigration become more likely. The fact that if you can't find a job and you have to make a living, you might be forced to do things that are outside of, you know, mainstream acceptability. And it seems to me that you get pushed into this by the very framework that put you in that position.
Right. Yeah, I think many people experience discrimination in the process of return and after deportation in their home countries, not just Mexico. Mexico is what we're talking about today. And discrimination at all levels, you know, discrimination culturally, linguistically, but also institutionally. And really, I mean, one of the things we hear from the stories, though, and the diversity that you see and hear in the book of all of these young people who really wanted to contribute their stories, to come out of the shadows and tell their stories publicly, is that, you know, people are struggling to overcome that discrimination in the same ways that they've been doing in the United States now, you know, for generations. That's happening in Mexico, and they're continuing that struggle after deportation. So there's examples of young people who, you know, it took 2 or 3 years to finally revalidate their studies, and now they're able to study, you know, dentistry in the university or another career, or like Maggie who was able to have a visa, B-1, B-2 visa, or Claudia to return home with Bring Them Home. And so that's, you know, one of the things that we want to draw attention to is that this institutional discrimination is something that's actually transnational, that crosses borders also, that immigrants are affected on both sides of the border, that you don't leave that immigrant pass behind and suddenly become, you know, a Mexican citizen. And that deportation is actually, you know, it's actually a very violent response to a broken system across the region. And it's not the right answer. It's not the right answer to respond to, you know, decades of broken immigration policy.
It also, it seems to me, points to how much is lost in this process where we're using force to keep people out. If you come here and you get an education, you've done that at public expense, and you can make a public contribution. You can pay that back many times over if you apply your education to a career that is productive for all of us. If you send somebody home after that, or choose not to educate them, in which case you're pretty much guaranteed they'll be in the criminal justice system, it seems to me a huge waste of resources and a misapplication of our intelligence.
Right. Well, and actually, I met many of the young people working in call centers in Mexico, and it's clear that in certain industries are actually taking advantage of you know, the militarized border and these forced expulsions, because in the, you know, it's, they can pay less money. People are very aware that they can they're earning less money working at a call center. You make a phone call for Dish Satellite tech support, you're likely calling someone in Mexico City who grew up in your town, you know, or somewhere nearby, who, you know, feels themselves to be U.S. American also, but has now been expelled from the country. So actually, I think there are industries and there's an economic system that is invested in deportation and actually is invested in the cultural education of these young people. But, you know, we have to ask why, and as you say, at what cost, you know, because these are young people. They want to study to become doctors, nurses, you know, in-home care, teachers, you know, and that's they don't want to work in call centers either.
Well, Maggie, when you were here and getting an education in this country and before you'd planned to go back, what were your intentions? What were you going to do with your education?
Yeah, I have always loved photography. So my idea was continue the path of art and design. I also volunteered a lot in my community in Georgia, in Dalton. I was in the Teen Resource Center, in the hospital. I worked with people in hospitals and in my church, in my high school. I really helped a lot in the community because I felt it like my home. So when I left, I felt like I have so many letters of recommendation from teachers and people in Dalton that I still keep with me, because that reminds me how hard I did try in my community, and I wasn't just being there without doing anything. I was productive in my community.
Jill, you talked about, or I'm sorry, Claudia, you talked about not feeling alone and realizing there was such a large community in Mexico that was feeling the same way. What's been the impact of this project and sort of finding people and bringing them together to tell their stories?
I think this is very impactful. Like, first of all, like Jill said, we were kind of living in the shadows. In my case, I describe in the book how at some point I kind of felt like I didn't have any past, and then my future was pretty blurry. So, like, understanding, and I think this the book or the stories have been like a path for me to find an identity, which is an identity that a lot of people might not understand, where we can actually love two countries, like knowing also, like, you know, we know all the wrong things or the broken things that are in the United States, as well as we understand also all the problems in Mexico. But at the same time, we love both of those countries. And it's very hard for other people to understand. So I think becoming that or bringing that identity of being bicultural, was a great thing.
Jill, many of the narratives in the book also address the impact of NAFTA and the influence it's had. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I think, well, many of the young people in the book are in this situation. Their parents were expelled from Mexico in the 90s because of the impact of NAFTA, because, you know, jobs related to specific industries like the shoe industry, like agriculture, disappeared rapidly with the rapid change of NAFTA and the influx of U.S. products into Mexico. And so, you know, we're talking major rapid economic shifts that meant that their parents had to leave and had to look. Many of them went to other cities in Mexico City and other places in Mexico, and then not finding opportunity there, eventually migrated to the U.S. where there was labor opportunity. Then these families, they grew up in the United States. They have siblings who are U.S. citizens. And so really I see, and these families are the product of U.S.-Mexican policy, no government policy that has directly affected their lives and is now displacing them once again by expelling these young people back to Mexico, and where they return to communities that are in the same situation with similar conditions or worse than that which expelled their parents.
Well,
in the
and
first place.
It exposes the underlying lie in the so-called neoliberal reforms, right? The lie was, well, the truth would have been that if everybody is free, that the market should decide both the price of labor and the price of the good. And so therefore, everybody's got a right to freely choose how to use their work and where to put their capital. And what we found was capital freely flew the border, but labor was stuck. And so if you could make more crossing the border in the same way that dollar made a lot more in Mexico than it would in the United States, that was free. Mm-hmm. When your labor could make a lot more in the United States, you were not free to leave Mexico. And that was the lie of those neoliberal reforms. So now you've got this project going on. And Maggie, I want to talk with you about this, the nonprofit that supports Los Otros Dreamers. Tell us about the nonprofit.
Yes, we are actually forming an organization called Otros Dreams en Acción. It's an organization that brings together our community, people that we have been deported or returned since 5 years, 8 years. And also we're trying to basically prepare ourselves to help others that will also be returning or will also be getting deported along with their families, and trying to fight for justice and our rights to be Mexican, but also never forget our right to be American as well. We can have an identity, as Claudia said, to be de aquí, de allá, from here and from there. I mean, I'm looking at everything on the news and like, oh, this happened to the U.S., this happened to Mexico. I get motivated when good things happen, but it also hurts me when bad things happen. So it's basically our organization is really fighting and speaking up for our rights to be in Mexico and be with dignity. But also in the U.S., we are part of mixed status families. Some of our parents are residents. Some of our siblings are citizens. Some of them have DACA. A lot of them are still undocumented. But there's no way we can separate these two countries now. So our organization helps with mental health, access to employment, trying to find opportunities in both places.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. Maggie Laredo and Claudia Amaro, two contributors to the anthology called Los Otros Dreamers, and Jill Anderson is one of the co-authors of the book. Thank you all for being on the program today.
Thank you very much.
Got more information about the book and their nonprofit at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the music of Yolanda Raybon. Stay tuned.